Okay, this is what I do remember. I remember watching a movie on Amazon Prime. The rush of brilliant red colors flooded my screen. My eyes transfixed, I remember saying to myself, one day, I will host a podcast and proudly announce, we watch Fury Redo, and it's time to visit Crazy Town tonight on...
Movie Mania.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Oh my goodness. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of B-Movie Mania. I am so happy to be your host for this evening's festivities. My name is Paul Brooks. And let's see here. What about the bald guy right here? Who the fuck are you?
Oh.
Who the fuck are you?
Jason Hulls.
Okay, oh. Let's see. The guy with the glasses right here. Who the fuck are you?
Who the fuck am I? Who are you, bitch? That was one of the
and,
lines, right?
And how about this guy here with the beard and the moppy hair? Are you a dumb whore or just a whore?
Oh, you're talking about me? Everyone's favorite?
Oh, this, this one right here, the Mike Hayes right there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a deaf whore.
Oh, okay, cool. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this episode. I'm talking to you guys, and I say that because... I wasn't sure if all of you were going to show up for this one.
I tried to think of anything else I could do, and nothing came up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We watched a film called Fury Redo. It came out in 2017, and it is a reboot of the original Fury, which came out in, I believe, 2005.
Which I've heard it's an indie classic.
It is indeed, Chris. And I'm going to guess that you guys are itching. So let's get to some quick takes.
Quick takes!
Jason Hulls, start me off, please.
Okay, I can do this.
You can do this. You got this.
I don't think I've ever typed ugh so much in my notes or ignored so much voiceover.
Chris Hudson, hit me with your quick take for Fury Redo.
I remember pouring myself a drink. Not just a single drink, but several drinks. The kind they serve at alcoholic bars where people drink. I remember turning the TV on and selecting this movie. I remembered not wanting to watch it, much like the actor doesn't want to star in a movie for which they haven't read the script, or a miner forced to stay underground as the canaries die. I remember wondering why this movie was made, and what the filmmakers wanted to say about the human condition. Or perhaps they just wanted to tell a timeless story while giving their friends bands exposure and a showcase for their unparalleled musicality.
I remember. This is supposed to be a quick take.
I'm almost done. I remember endless narration, stated uneloquently without thought for words or any sort of coherent meaning. I remember wanting to be forgiving to the filmmakers because making movies is hard, and I don't want to shit on their passion. But most of all, I remember disliking this film. Quick takes!
Thank you very much for that. Mike Hayes!
Paul?
Yes?
Who is this movie even for?
Thank you.
That is an excellent question.
Oh my God.
I have an answer. If I can do it, can I do it now?
Well, we don't have a Paul quick take yet. I mean,
oh yeah, okay, all right.
I mean, not that we're about to. We don't have to follow any sort of format because this film didn't.
No, it didn't. We could do Paul's quick take at the end
when he rates it.
I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that, Jay.
I think that the movie is for the director because the director was the contractor who was supposed to fix the skylight, if you know what I mean.
Oh, geez.
I was gonna bring that up a little later.
Wondering who that fucking lucky dude was.
Yep.
I did not know that. Thank you for that tidbit.
It's the only one enjoying this movie.
Oh, he enjoyed it.
I don't really have a quick take other than I know that you guys are a little pissed off, or at least you were last night when you were...
Paul, I just watched it again.
Oh, God.
I know. I don't know how you did it.
Oh, my God.
I'm on my fourth beer, is how.
Let me just state for the record, Stephanie Miller, my lovely girlfriend, introduced me to this film, so you can blame it all on her.
Oh, my God.
Jesus, wait a minute. No, unpack that. She picked this?
She said, I watched a movie last night.
No.
You have to come over right now and watch it with
me.
We watched it the
Stephanie.
Next night.
Oh, my God.
Who are you?
Paul, if I remember correctly, too, didn't you send me the trailer for this a long time ago?
I did indeed. I'm like, Jay, I'm having trouble deciding whether or not to pick this film for the podcast.
Jay, so this is on you too? The blood
God
is on your hands?
It.
I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know.
Jay, do you remember what your response to me was?
Yes.
You're like, how is this even a question? Yes, you're picking this.
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe I was in my fungicide phase. I don't know.
Oh, yep. God.
Jesus.
All right, guys, let's get into it. How exactly does Fury Redo start in the middle of things?
A woman, Lainey McCoy, is covered in blood, and she's sitting in a hotel with a guy that looks like you had a baby with our friend Dave Jeter, and except without eyes.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what I do remember. I remember the red motel sign on the skyline, how it throbbed through the window afterwards. I remember dialing 911 and waiting by the window as the sirens wailed towards me.
Did this movie really need to start in the middle of things? It would have been like 5, maybe 10 minutes shorter if it just kind of like
Chris,
eased into things.
It was an hour and 9 minutes long. Are you really complaining?
It was 69 minutes long, Paul. Say it right.
69. Thank you, Mike. 69 minutes.
Nice.
God. Okay, so that must have been on purpose then.
Wait, okay. Because I'm going to bring this up now because of the structure of the film. You know, it like works its way back to the moment that the movie starts in kind of, sort of.
Right. Very Tarantino.
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Really Tarantino.
Took a bite out of Tarantino's style.
God.
Well, you know what? Never mind. I'm gonna save this for the end, because I have some big questions about the end.
Okay, fair enough. We'll save it for the end. Save it for the podcast, Jay.
Okay.
Jay, I thought you were going to bring up the fact that someone dropped the camera at some point during filming, and just every shot was then just red.
We'll get there.
Yeah. Well, why not talk about it now? We're talking about how it's going back and forth between current time and past. Everything in the past to show it, instead of it being like, I don't know, slightly different lighting, it's just fucking, they took the green channel on the image and just put it to fucking red.
Yeah, it's a red, they did like a red pass.
Yeah. Mike, would you say it's rad filter, Joe? Rad filter!
Rad. I would. It's literally nothing's green. If you watch the green lawns, it's all red. They took that green channel and
everything
fucking just
was red.
It.
Well, they did that at a specific moment, though.
No, everything that's in the past is in that. I watched it a second time. It's all there.
Yeah.
Is it the past, or is it when she decides to start killing people? I thought it was
it's at the party's a little red, too. It's not as red, but the party's red, too.
Okay, because there's a moment where it jumps out at you. There's a moment where it just switches.
Well, I literally thought someone broke the camera, because at the beginning of the film, there's, like, missing pixels. There's, like, bars that go across the screen, and it's, like...
Oh, those are the credits, Mike.
No, those were blank lines across the image. And so then when I started realizing it was in red, when, like you said, Jay, it really pops out, I was like, oh, fuck, maybe someone dropped the camera and it fucked something up. and then I realized that wasn't the case, because, you know, like, I started to see the pattern and just, oh, God. Is it red or is it salmon? Now that I'm thinking about it.
I think it starts off salmon and becomes pure red. But hey, now that you mention it, here's another thing I noticed, is that our very lovely heroine, anti-heroine, I don't know what you'd call her, Lainey, I noticed that it's only in the flashback scenes that she shows off her breasts.
Well, the whole movie's a flashback scene. I mean, there's barely anything that's not flashback. Everything's soaked in salmon jizz, and it's just fucking terrible.
Yeah, about 80%, I would say, maybe, is flashbacks.
Yeah.
All right. But let's get to our first scene that's not a flashback.
Okay.
We have a news report sort of describing some of the events, the first of many news reports, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And so our lead character here, Lainey McCoy, is a big story on the news and on the internet and the tabloids. And we got Dan Gilder doing his investigative reports. And this is a big story, guys.
Best actor of the movie.
Yeah, by far.
This is Channel 6 News reporting live outside of the Titusville Police Department, where prominent attorney Lainey McCoy has just been arrested and taken into custody.
His IMDb is the most fleshed out also. He's been in a ton of things. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Okay, so from there, Lainey meets her attorney, Rebecca Carlton.
Oh, the attorney is the audience identification character.
Mm, yes,
is
indeed.
She, you know what? Yes, she really is, because she acts like she does not want to be there at all.
Oh my God. It's perfect.
I like that you guys are busting out like fucking actual criticism of the film.
But Rebecca gives Lainey some advice. Does anyone remember the particular piece of advice she gives her up front?
At the very beginning.
And is it something about not being so wordy or some shit?
I'm going to have to advise you to not sound so intellectual.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yep.
I was the one who dialed 911. I talked to the police.
I'm going to have to advise you to not sound so intellectual.
I'm glad you picked up on that, because it bears pointing out here that the sound for this movie is really rough.
Jay, you're telling me that the crew didn't film with ceiling snakes hissing from the tops of the roofs?
That's where all the budget went, the ceiling snakes. No, it's like, it's really hard to understand a lot of what's being said. If there's any noise going on in the room around you, you're going to have to crank the TV. It was just very difficult, so I feel like I eventually just started tuning out large chunks of what she was saying, because I'm like, I can't hear it.
Speaking of that, Chris, there's large portions of this movie have narration in it, and it's very detailed. It's almost poetic. How would you describe it?
I'm going to say that the lawyer told her not to sound so intellectual. She was pretty successful at that, because she sounds using really big words in really awkward combinations that just drones on and on and on in a sort of run-on sentence that doesn't really make that much sense if you really stop to think about it for a little bit. And she sounds a lot like a certain big politician that I don't want to get into right now, because it will alienate so many of our listeners, I'm sure. But she tends to talk on and on and on. Big words.
All right, we got it, Chris. Thanks.
May I interrupt? All right, Paul, I think now. I have a way to answer your question, because I did want to make a point about this.
Yeah.
The voiceover throughout the film is spoken as if it's a monologue for a one-person show.
That's it, exactly.
I had no idea. He looked vaguely familiar, but yet I couldn't place it. He was younger, that fashionably scruffy look, a hands-in-pocket sort of guy, affectionately annoying and not my type at all.
She's literally talking like you do for that. Now, a lot of the time, these storytellers tell a very eloquent and interesting story. That's not the case for this, unfortunately. But it is that. And Jay, to solve your fucking noise problem, if you put those captions on, your brain explodes, because nothing is typed correctly. Nothing is typed correctly. And there's a period after every four words. It is insane.
You know, guys, we're being pretty negative about this movie.
I know. I don't want to be. I don't want
to. I just wanted to point that out. I'm not saying it. I just wanted to say
I have positives to say later. Just not right. I got to vent this right now.
Okay.
So, Mike, did you watch the movie the first time around without the subtitles on, and then the second go around you put them on?
No, I've gotten into really watching these movies with captions on, because sometimes you see beautiful things, like when her young boy toy, which we'll get to here in a minute.
Oh, Michael.
Yeah, well, you know, when she leaves his house for the first time, he kind of barely does kind of like a breath, and it captions his sexy groan. And you know that means someone actually typed all these words out, meaning what the fuck was the spell check problem? Because there's a lot of bad shit in this.
All right, from there, let's keep moving on here. Lainey begins sort of deconstructing how the events at the beginning of the movie that we saw, how that unfolded, beginning with Angela's party on New Year's Eve. And that, Mike, that's where Lainey meets Michael.
Yep.
Talk a little bit, Mike, about this New Year's Eve party. What goes down here?
There's a handful of people who are acting drunk in the unbelievable kind of way.
Can I just say real quick, though, that for a New Year's Eve party, I think the reason why there aren't very many people here is that it's kind of a mid-afternoon New Year's Eve party.
About 3:30 p.m.?
Yeah. The party hasn't really begun yet.
Yeah. But it's at a bar, apparently, and Lainey is drunk, and her friend Angela's drunk. But then some other girl jumps up and talks to her, and it's one of many pointless parts of the movie that advances the plot in no way possible.
She's there
for the amazing cooking scene.
No, that's Angela, not the woman who stands up and tries to convince her to come to her Jehovah's Witness play.
Oh my God, you look so good. You should really come to the show that I'm doing. It's a one-woman show about being a Jehovah's Witness. A little weird, but I really think you should come.
Oh, yeah, that's somebody different.
That's a person that shouldn't have been in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyway, she wanders over to a booth where Michael is, and she starts flirting with him, and they do some real bad pickup lines.
Favorite line of the movie right here.
Yeah, this is... I groaned, but not a sexy groan. It was just a groan of like, oh, God.
Can I guess you the line?
Yeah, go, Jay.
It's not my back I was hoping you'd rub.
That's a good guess.
I mostly just wanted to say that so you'd have to edit in the sound here.
Oh, damn it.
Let me guess. You want a back rub. Really? That's such a lame approach.
It's not my back I was hoping you'd rub.
No, that's a good guess, but it's actually, and I'll put this line in here as well, where the fuck you been all night?
God. Right here.
Where the fuck you been all night?
Right here.
I think one of my favorite lines in the movie comes up right after that when they go back to what I thought was his house, but later in the movie she mentions she's never been to his house, so I don't know where the fuck they were fucking. But they walk into a door and start fucking to sexy music, as the caption said.
Were they groans?
And during that, there's a voice.
Thank you, Jay.
She has a VO that says, like a burn victim, first filleted, then scarred. And that's not a thing. I Googled that. I found one case of a murderer that a man killed someone, filleted them, then burned them. But that's not a normal thing.
Can always count on Mike for the good research.
Thanks, Mike.
For this whole scene, I have, oh no, the butt shot. He gives her his number.
Hey, AJ, I have a similar note here. Does she sleep on a couch? Is that where they banged? Ugh,
seems
I don't
like
care.
That was the case.
Ugh, but.
So wait, where were they then? Okay, so if they weren't at his house,
it
and
was
they
his
weren't
house.
At her. But no, but she.
But I thought it was her house. I think it's her house because she's there in the shoe taking off scene and where she's just checking the mail.
But New Year's Day, it's 8 in the morning, and she goes, I'm going to go, doesn't
yeah,
she? Or
yeah,
does
she
does.
Kick him out?
That's what, yeah, it's very confusing.
But when later, when she's when we know she's off her rocker, and she goes to his house, she says oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm going to say it now. Here's my problem with the movie. The fact that she's an insane person is used as if like it doesn't matter how well I write a script, because it doesn't fucking matter, because whatever she does doesn't have to make sense, because she's crazy.
You know what? That improved the score I'm going to give this movie. Thank you for that insight, Mike.
This is supposed to be just a New Year's Eve fling, right? Just a one-night stand. But Lainey kind of gets caught up in things and keeps hanging out with Michael. They go to dinner.
Don't jump too quickly.
Yeah. No, I got this line here. They're at dinner. Goddamn. This was supposed to be simple.
The conversation was casual at first. Simple, polite. The how was your day type of thing. But then he cracked that smile of his, and I melted. God damn, this was supposed to be simple.
On impulse, I held his hand until I could feel his pulse again. It's a shock to me every time, rediscovering the blood heat of another human being. I resisted the urge to suck his fingers, to slide them between the folds of my skirt. My underwear, I noticed, were already wet. Fuck.
And you know what? Guess what? I'm in my notes next. She doesn't resist because I have in the car. Oh no, graphic fingering.
Yeah. Guys, I want to also mention, okay, so when she calls him to go to this dinner thing, Michael picks up his phone and you can see what he has her in his phone as.
Well, yeah, I couldn't catch it. What was it, Mike?
Oh, I rewound and paused in slow mode so much to get it. It is so good. She's in there as my slam piece. My slam piece. Chivalry's slam not dead. Piece. Chivalry is alive.
Wow.
Man, this movie is just layers and layers. It's like an onion.
It makes you cry.
Totally. 100%.
You know what? That's the sound. That's the sound of my score going up a little bit more now.
But Jay, they don't even make it.
No.
Back no, home. Where do we go?
He takes his slam piece to the Hyundai.
God damn it! Fuck!
Gets things warmed up with the finger express or whatever you want to call it, and then
the slam-a-jamma,
and then they slam a jam in his Hyundai.
Wow!
And let's just remind the audience right here: all of this is in bright red hues the entire time.
And in the middle of the day.
Yeah, and not just that, though. This is where I wrote down the note. It feels like the movie's been going on for a while. But I wrote, oh, God, I'm not even 20 minutes into this.
Hey, listen, say whatever you want. This thing moves.
Yeah.
Does it not?
Yeah, sure. No, it does.
No.
It moves.
Only when you look at the clock it does, but it drags.
So anyway, can we do the lawyer thing now? Like, we're back.
Yes. I don't think there's really anything of note in that particular. It's just a lot of like kind of going over the same thing over and over again.
This is before she meets up with Angela again, right?
Yeah, that's what's next.
Okay.
Lainey meets up with Angela at a coffee shop they just sort of bump into each other, but they end up chatting, and it's a pretty interesting scene. Chris, you want to talk a little bit about this here?
First of all, which the one with the big cleavage? What was her
name? Angela.
Okay, yeah, Angela. This is really a big scene for the citizens of Titusville, where this was filmed. Because
one way to put it.
Because Lainey and what was her name? The other girl. Lainey
Angela.
And the other girl.
I don't
Lainey and Angela.
Lainey and Angela. They're just talking about getting it on and how much they love Dick and all that stuff.
But who's
and
Dick?
I guess Michael's Dick? I don't even remember, yeah.
Yes, they both fucked Michael. That's where Lainey finds out that Angela once fucked Michael.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I couldn't hear there it, we go. So I wasn't sure.
It explains a lot.
It does. And what's really cool about this scene is that the camera constantly cuts away to the other people in this coffee shop looking eavesdropping in the conversation and just looking disgusted. And it's not just like one or two people. It's like five, six,
every guy
in this coffee shop they cut to make a terrible like expression.
Jay, how do you feel about the blocking and the cinematography of this scene?
It's genius.
So Lainey has a few girlfriends over to her place. Uh-huh. And couple girls, while they're sitting in the dining room, Lainey is cooking up a stew in the kitchen.
That is not how you cook a stew. I'm just going to say that right now.
I know that all you guys are very familiar with how to cook a stew. Mm-hmm. Jay,
mm-hmm.
What's going on with this Lainey stew?
Well, it may be Lainey's stew, but it's Angela's body that's in the stew.
Angela...
Yeah, there's an arm sticking out of
it. It was killed at some point. We don't see it.
No.
Well, at this point, I think this is where Lainey goes from 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds, because
yep.
She'd never like killed anyone, I can only assume. I don't know the character's backstory.
Hey, we might get a Fury prequel somewhere along the way.
We can only hope. But she's cooking this, but apparently somewhere along the way, she chops up her friend and puts her in a pot, in a big stock pot. But all that's really in there are some vegetables, her ring finger, I think, and like an arm hanging out of the pot. Like, that's not how you cook a stew. Like, you've got
to
put it all
in there. You mean she sort of like dices up the arm and puts it in there?
No. It's just the whole arm just sticking right out of the pot. Just sort of. It's really there to make us, you know, it's beating us over the head that, yep, she's cooking her friend.
Like, the first time I watched it, I didn't catch that she was mad at Angela for having had sex with Michael. So I saw this big thing in there, and I thought, is this fake? Is this like a style thing? Is what's going on here? That she's not really cooking it up for someone.
Oh, she is.
But she did. Because she then pulls a third bowl out for herself, opens a can of Campbell's Chunky Soup, of which Campbell's should sue for, and then pours it in. And she eats cold soup while she feeds her two friends the Angela goulash.
Yeah, but I thought her friends would be in on this because she's not really hiding the fact that she's cooking an... There's an arm in her stew. Like, yeah. That's right in plain view
her
of the kitchen.
Her friends are 4 feet away.
Yeah.
And there's an arm sticking out of a pot in her kitchen.
And she also... So she intentionally eats cold Campbell's soup instead of the stew, as if, I don't want to eat this. But then she still picks up Angela's finger and, like, sucks on it and, like, just gets it all up in her mouth. So she's obviously not grossed out about... I don't know, guys.
Hey, we're almost to my favorite line of the movie.
I hope it's what I think it is.
Is it in this scene, Jay, or the next scene?
Well, what's the next scene in your mind?
No.
We're treated to a flashback within a flashback with Lainey's friend, Heather.
Yeah.
Go for it. You know what? Just go for it.
Go for it? Okay, so I don't know how they get on this, because whatever, they're talking. And so
Girl talk, you know?
And this girl is talking about how she's going to get her skylight fixed, and it cuts to the scene where she's in the bedroom.
This is
the director, okay, the guy who's fixing it, and she immediately starts banging this guy, and while she's banging him, she's moaning, "Fix my skylight."
Yeah.
I did legitimately laugh at that.
Hey, the Watchmen. Fury Redu just called, and you're off the hook for most pointless sex scene in a movie. Don't worry about it anymore. Because fucking well, what?
A little something for all you Watchmen fans out there.
But no, it is pointless. I know there was some good-looking boobs and butts and stuff in that one, at least, you know. But it's pointless.
Yes, but can I just say that this scene was far from pointless? Because this gave the director his big chance to really get his face up in some titties.
Dude, he went for it.
He was best acting in the entire movie right there.
That's why this whole movie exists. That's why he wrote this.
That's gotta be it.
So Lainey starts getting weird and pretty obsessive over Michael. She goes over to his place. She finds a woman there who claims to be Michael's friend, but Jay, Lainey is not having it. She gets into Michael's phone. Things really get ramped up here. Talk about this scene a little bit.
Lainey pulls up to Michael's house, and there's this girl on his couch that's he's going to help her make a music video, and they do not get along.
That would be an understatement.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you?
Who are you?
Where's Michael?
He went to get pizza and a beer. Who are you again?
Are you fucking him?
Not that it's any of your business, but no.
Michael assures her that there's nothing going on between them, and the girl leaves, and he's going to go take a shower. And so then Lainey, goes through the phone and hears a message from his roommate / girlfriend. Then she takes a selfie of herself and then, like, saves it on his home screen of his phone. And then she takes a marker and writes, "slut," on a photo of Michael's.
Is that what it said?
I couldn't tell what it said, but that makes sense.
I just assumed that's what I thought it looked like.
Jay, you missed the craziest part of this fucking scene. I'm sorry. The craziest part of this fucking scene is that Michael is gone when Lainey gets there. She scares Jen out. Michael comes back with the pizza, and he's like, "Hey, why don't you stay? I got pizza. Eat the pizza." And then Michael, with a fresh hot pizza, goes and takes a fucking shower.
I didn't even think about that.
You just brought home a pizza. You're not going to eat a goddamn shower.
He does that because Lainey has to be free for a moment so that she can go beat the other girl's head in with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's a thing that happens.
Hey, but before we get into the baseball bat beating scene, I just want to bring up a point that I don't think we've addressed yet. But did anyone notice, like, a red filter over everything in this movie?
What?
Like, it's seriously over every single scene.
I don't know what you're talking about. It was all very lush green tones throughout the film. So I just want to touch on this baseball beating scene.
Oh, my God.
Mike, would you describe it as some solid practical effects here? Or?
Well, being someone who has done visual effects on a feature-length film...
True.
I, I've seen worse, I guess.
that's also true.
There's some blood that's coming out at the camera, and a neighbor comes out. And like, hey, everything okay?
Okay, can I do the next thing? Because it also has maybe one of my favorite lines.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So finally, the lawyer tells her to eliminate that part of from her testimony, where she murdered someone.
Yeah.
And Lainey resists. And finally, the lawyer blows up on her. And as she's going off right. on Lainey, she says,
"Everything I've been trying to do is build a case. Just try to find some way to defend your ass. And all you're doing is talking in circles. I can't make heads or tails of half the shit you've written down and said."
And I just thought, I couldn't agree more.
Yep, that is totally, definitely the audience identification role.
But let's talk about Lainey's sort of attitude throughout these proceedings here, because she's with her lawyer going through all these events that happen. At no point does she deny really any of it.
Yeah.
She kind of says, I just want you to understand what happened.
That, and she also claims she doesn't remember part of it, but yeah, she fucking does. Like, at no point is she a sympathetic character. Once you realize she's bonkers, you're just like, ah, Jesus.
So we flash back again, and...
oh, God, not again.
Oh, yeah, again. Julie is over at Lainey's place. She's one of the girls that was over earlier during the stew scene.
She's the one you might recall with all the wrinkles on her face. Not by my opinion, but what Lainey said to her.
Yeah, and Mike, I know you got a lot of quotes written down, so if you need to bust any of them out at any point, just do it.
I decided that what causes the harm is not is not being lied to, but the long drop of finding out that you're the only person in the play who doesn't know the plot. Which I think is a very apt fucking voiceover for this movie.
Meta. Very meta.
Sorry, continue.
Julie gets into the fridge over at Lainey's place, and...
All right, and now this is why Lainey really needs to clean her goddamn fridge. You leave a hand in there of who... yeah. I don't know whose hand it is. Probably her other friend that she cooked. But she left her hand in there, and Julie's all like, I'll get it out of the fridge. And Lainey made no attempt to keep her out of the fridge.
Chris, you've broken this wide open. Holy shit.
Sees the hand... And then Lainey's like, okay, gotta kill you.
Chris, yeah, and Chris. She kills her with a burning hot pan of stir fry to the face.
Mike, God. What are you trying to say?
What? You just broke this wide open, Chris. Why is there a second hand? Either she keeps saving hands to eat, because that maybe is Jen's hand, or maybe she's keeping Angela's hand because she's going to use it in another stew a second time. Maybe she's reusing them. I don't know what's happening, but I'm really excited now.
Did your score just go up a couple points?
Maybe one.
You know, when you really stop and think about it, they put a lot of thought into this script.
I like the use of the weapon. I like the use of the burning hot pan of stir fry as a murder weapon.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
I mean, she clocks
it's pretty
her.
Effective, yeah.
That just sucks. I mean, that's like, ouch.
So, Lainey goes to work.
Yeah, she does. She goes to work, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Methinks she gets a little horny while she's in her office.
Pulls out a double-ended dildo, goes up her skirt, and she's like, sometimes it's good to have sex at work, or something like that. I didn't write this line down, but it's a good line.
I know what you're talking about. She says a little bit of sex can be dangerous.
I doubt that the details are relevant of precisely what I did behind the locked door of my office, alone in my business suit. All I'm saying is that a little bit of sex is a dangerous thing.
Because basically, if you're getting sex all the time, you're all good. If you're not getting sex, well, you know, not much you can do about it. But if you're getting just a little bit, it makes you horny.
Which is a callback to the cabin scene where her voiceover says, safe sex is an oxymoron if I've heard one.
So true. God, she's dropping truth bombs left and right.
God, just get me to that spilt milk scene.
Please. Okay, we're there.
Oh, my God.
Are we there?
We're there.
Yep.
Talk to me about the milk scene.
We get a shot where someone set a camera on the counter, and she spills an open, quart of milk on the counter. And as she's cleansing it up, she says... It was already too much for me, and I hadn't even begun. I knew from the moment I opened my eyes in the morning that I was all alone in this. I knew it. I was in this with him, alone. And you know, I can't even tell you what a relief it was to find myself in that space, a zone in which it seems possible that something else, someone else, could take on the impossible task of being me. A zone in which someone else decided every second how to deploy my body and mind.
Mike, I say those words to myself every single time I spill milk, infomercial style. Knocking over some milk. All right, monologue time.
All right, so we've come to a crucial moment in the film. Lainey picks up Patty from the train station. Of course, we remember in a previous scene where she listened to the voicemail. And Lainey takes it upon herself to pick up Patty from the train station. And things start out real sweet here, Jay, but turn pretty ugly pretty quick.
They sure do.
So are you a dumb whore or just a whore?
Excuse me?
I asked, are you a dumb whore or just a whore?
Oh, God. And she does, the Patty doesn't get it. And then eventually Patty gets it and tries to run over a bridge. And then Lainey shoots her.
You have nowhere to go, Patty! Answer the fucking question!
What question?
How long have you been fucking him?
I don't know, 6 months?
Wrong answer!
There's some good lines in here, Mike. You got any written down?
No, but I do have written down that this scene in the car where Lainey is like going fucking straight bonkers on Patty here is, I think, genuinely terrifying. Like, it's actually a really a tense scene.
Yeah, I would say this is the best scene of the film.
Like,
yeah.
It's really good. And they go back and Patty eventually starts getting on and gets scared and wants to get out. And eventually she lets her out. And all that tension is ruined when Patty runs across halfway across the bridge. Lainey shoots at her twice but misses. And then Patty just stops and turns around and says, fine, fucking shoot me, I guess. And it's just, God.
Very cinematic.
The line is, you have nowhere to go, Patty. And she does have somewhere else to go. The other side of the fucking bridge and beyond.
Jump in the river.
There was some woods just on the other side. I mean, she could have hidden easily.
Let's just say she's frozen with fear.
No, she turned around. That's not frozen.
Well, regardless, Patty bites the bullet, quite literally. She dies. A pretty gruesome death. And the fury strikes again.
That's the media's name for... It's
her killer nickname.
No one should have mentioned it, because it's a very bad name for a killer.
After that, we're gonna breeze through this, guys. After that, Michael, having a little bit of car trouble, and Lainey just happens to drive by. Jay, this is where we get our caboose. Or Jay, you want to take... Who wants this?
I just like the hotel. It's a hotel made of cabooses.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
She takes Michael back to the caboose motel where she's staying. And Chris, what goes down in here? We got some pretty pivotal stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, so Lainey tells Michael that she's got some stuff to give back to him. So it'll only take a minute. So Lainey says, okay, here's your stuff. I'm just going to go to the bathroom. So she goes to the bathroom, but she doesn't say why. It's to change into some sexy lingerie, though, as you find out momentarily. Now I can't tell if the lingerie is actually red or if it's just the filter making it red.
It could be royal blue for all we know.
We don't know.
But she comes out of the bathroom in this very sexy number and walks right up to Michael. And I don't remember all the details because it's kind of a blur at this point.
Who wants to take it from here?
Yeah, I will. They get into a fight. She flips out and forbids Michael to, like, see people or whatever. And then
forbid me to see whom?
Yeah, and then she, like, hits him? Or she just kind of motions her hands toward his face and his eyes fall out of his head.
She punches his goddamn eyes out.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
I'm your girlfriend, Michael. No. If you love me, you wouldn't want to look. You wouldn't want to look at other woman. You wouldn't want to look!
Not an exaggeration, eyeballs on the floor of the caboose motel.
They fell out of his head.
As the eyeballs hit the floor.
Like retina detached.
Yeah.
everything that connects to the brain detached on the floor.
I mean, that's a name worthy of fury. Like,
that's where the name
punches
comes from,
or like just almost just slaps him in the face or something. Just hits him in the face and his eyes fall out. They should have just made this like a superpower and had her do that to everybody in the movie.
And then you can make eyeball soup. That would have been cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have given this a much higher score had that happened.
This leads me to the problem that I alluded to earlier. So now we're back to the beginning of the movie that we saw where Michael is sitting there with his eyes falling out and she's covered in blood, kind of.
We've come for full circle.
We have, but then, like, that's it. I mean, it's over. So, like, the last thing you see, or like, the latest chronological thing that happens is her in jail. So, like, nothing happens with the lawyer, or there's no direction of where it's going to go.
Yeah.
It just ends.
We do find out Michael's fine in the credits.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't call that fine.
Well, he's got bandages over his eyes and he's drinking a beer and then just throws it down like, yeah.
Yes, so if that's your definition of fine, I guess he's fine.
Let me drop a little bit of knowledge on you guys. Am I the only one that watched the original Fury for this podcast?
Jesus.
Is that the one with Shia LaBeouf and the tank?
No, you know what? It's my movie. It was my burden to bear, but I did watch the original Fury.
I think you know we're getting at.
Let me just say, I thought it was interesting that the entire movie.
I think I know what you're going to say, Paul.
Mike, can I say it, please?
Yeah, just go ahead. But I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay. The entire original film was basically the exact same line for line.
Except they improvised some lines for new technology, right?
Shut up and let me say it.
I think I know what you're saying, though.
The whole movie is basically the same except for the very, very end. After we go full circle and we see Michael with his eyes torn out, it suddenly cuts to an insane asylum where Lainey is in a straitjacket and Michael is her nurse.
What?
And he's checking on her to make sure she's okay. And all of her narration is all the stuff that she's saying in the asylum. But that was not in redo at all.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I kind of like that they left it out. I don't know.
To make it more real, because the asylum thing is kind of a cliche, right? It was inside of a crazy person's head or a dream. So I kind of like that they did leave it out and made it just a real, like, true crime, quote-unquote, kind of a thing.
Right. But here's the thing that I really want to ask you guys. She lunges at Michael. His eyes fall out of his head. Honest question. Do you guys think it was an accident on her part?
No.
Meant to do it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Can I just say that, it was definitely purposeful because early on, we find out that Michael is actually a videographer. You know, he's making music videos and stuff.
Right.
So what better punishment for a videographer than to make his eyes fall out of his head?
Wow.
Brutal. Yeah. Brutal.
It is called Fury.
Chris is pulling in those things. Paul, can I quickly comment on what I thought you were getting at?
Please.
I read a little trivia, an IMDb trivia, that said some of the lines from the script were improvised because... to update for modern technology, which gave me two questions. One, they use the same script.
Yeah.
Why? Two, did they not think to update certain references? Because there's a line I'll read to you guys from the scene where Lainey and her two friends are talking, and she's talking about, they're like, what would you even talk to a 20-year-old about? And she says,
I know what you're going to say. Say it.
Occasionally in passing, I would explain to him who Virginia Woolf was, or William Wadsworth. Fine. Fair enough, right?
Fair enough.
But she continues with, this is 2017. She continues with, he would fill me in on Courtney Love or Eve 6. So early in the film, she says she's 41. So in this is 2017. So
I think she said 42.
She said almost 45.
She was fucking 20 when those fucking bands were doing their thing. She knew who the fuck they were. and he, as a 25-year-old, was 5.
You know what's interesting about that, Mike? In the original Fury, She also says that she's 42, pushing 45. So how old is she a vampire?
Wait, see, I have that written down. Maybe she's a vampire, literally.
Really?
Yeah, I swear to you. Is she an alien? Is she a vampire?
Cool.
You know, so I got that written down.
Hey, I found another interesting thing about this movie. What was his name? Gorman, I forget the guy's first, the director, writer-director of this, said that this movie is loosely based on his second marriage.
No, whoa,
ouch.
God.
Oh, man.
No, it all makes sense. Holy shit.
Must have been one hellish marriage.
Oh, God.
Well, guys, quite the experience, needless to say. If any of our B-movie maniacs are listening and want to see more, this film group does have a Roku channel. Mm-hmm. Mike, you alluded to it earlier. What should somebody search for if they're on Roku and they want to see more from these guys?
Maddie GTV. There's like three. There's three channels, if I remember right, when I was looking this stuff up. There's like Maddie GTV, Maddie GTV Late Night, and then there's like another one.
They've also got a lot of stuff on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of movies on Amazon Prime.
Jay, you going to be hitting some of that up when we're done recording tonight?
Yeah.
Very convincing.
Not all of it is like psychotic thriller stuff. They also have the rights to stream the TNT original television event starring Noah Wiley about Bill Gates versus Steve Jobs. So
what?
I was looking at what they have going on, and that's
Mark,
streaming
okay.
in February.
They are the people behind this. They're clearly really into what they do.
Oh, and absolutely.
They're really trying hard to, like, create, like, a company that has a lot of media.
And that's commendable.
Oh, it absolutely.
Is. Yes, yes.
All right, well, guys, I think that about wraps it up. Let's get into rating time.
Rating time.
1 out of 100, Dan Gilder Investigative Reports.
Fuck
and Mike,
you.
I'll do the graphic. What do you rate Fury Redo? Chris Hudson.
Oh, boy.
Let's get the downer out of the way here.
Yeah, I think this is... So when I rate these, I try to compare it to other movies we've rated and keep some sort of consistency or continuity with established mythology. They're trying really hard. You know, it's hard to make a movie, so I don't want to get too down on them, but I did not enjoy this movie at all, and I don't understand. I mean, there were some moments here talking with you guys that maybe it would be fun to watch with friends when you're having a drink or two, but I just cannot recommend this at all. And so I'm trying to compare it to any movie that we have watched, and I realized that
I don't think there is one
that, I just want to say that I enjoyed Josh Kirby twice as much as I enjoyed this movie.
Oh, no!
So I gave Josh Kirby a 6.
Whoa.
So I'm going to have to rate Fury Redo a 3.
Whoa.
Oh, man. Wow. That is the lowest score ever on this podcast.
Yeah, I would rather watch Josh Kirby, Time Warrior, than this movie.
Wow.
Mike Hayes, balance this out a little bit here.
Well, speaking of balance, I feel since I've watched this movie twice, I deserve 2 votes.
Okay, I'll allow it.
Yes! All right. So, here's what I have to say about this. For vote one, I have 2 lenses to put this through. While I was a bit negative throughout it, and I was a bit mocking throughout this discussion of the film, I do think that the progression and revealing of Lainey's character of actually being batshit fucking crazy is pretty good. And there were a lot of times I wasn't sure if I was squirming because I was of how awkward the filmmaking was or of how awkward and much I didn't like the scene from the context of what Lainey was doing in the scene. So, because she had a lot of weird, creepy stuff she was doing, and I, a lot of the time, was very creeped out by it. I was very cringing about it. And I do actually think that was intentional. I don't think that was just me being...
Right.
Yeah, I think that was actually really good. So overall, I'm going to give it a 50.
Okay.
I think that was fun. And if you want to see an indie film then check this out. Like, you can learn, I think you can learn a lot from this movie. I think they did a lot of really good stuff in terms of the revealing of how crazy this character actually was. Especially with
now,
the second.
How's this going to work with the second vote?
Oh, a 10. Because I hated it. I hated it. But out of
right, now, you know what? Now you're doing the graphic.
No. I didn't enjoy it all that much, and I wouldn't recommend anyone necessarily watch it for a fun factor. But I do think it did a lot of stuff really well. Actually, as much as nitpicky as I was, I think overall it had a good stuff. But enjoyment level was a 10.
Jason Hulse.
I thought I was going to sound like the bad guy here, but compared to Chris, not so much. You know, part of me says, you know, these guys are trying hard, and it's clear. It's clear that, I mean, they got a lot going on. You just look into their company, they got a lot happening. The other part of me says, I have never looked forward more to shoveling snow than I did last night, because I had to shovel my driveway after this movie, and I was like, maybe that won't be so bad.
Well, I'm sorry, but you only get one vote.
I know. So, God. You know, and again, I don't want to be too mean. Or, you know, they got a movie done. They got it done. It was the second go-round, and I feel like there was still a lot of problems. But I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just going to say 15 because of the TV reporter.
Oh, my God.
So you would rather watch this than Josh Kirby.
I don't remember what I gave Josh Kirby. Do you?
You gave it 11, Jay.
An 11?
An 11. I looked it up
today. Yes, I would rather watch this again than Josh Kirby.
This is shorter. I'll give you that.
I mean, there's a lot of jaw-dropping stuff when you watch this. You're like, it's just crazy. You can have fun with this movie.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Because, listen, you guys are entitled to your opinion, so I don't want to say that I'm disappointed, but I'm a little bit surprised, because for me, this movie was laugh out loud funny on multiple occasions.
God, Paul.
And the type of experience that really sticks with you for better or worse. I'm going to go 90.
What?
Wow.
What?
Dan.
Wow.
Dan
oh
Gilder
God.
Investigative Reports. Needless to say, it holds your attention. The pace is extremely fast. It really moves. And it's a ton of fun to get together with some people and watch this thing. I've done it. I've had people over and watched it, and people just lose their minds. And that's the type of experience that I enjoy.
Okay, well then, listeners, you've got to get together with people to watch this.
Yeah,
do not
I
watch this on your own.
I can see that being better. Paul, this is your, like, cup of tea, though, right?
Yes.
If I look for what Paul's need, we all like a broad bunch of B-movies. Paul's cup of tea is a modern indie B-movie style thing. You love The Room. You love Neil Breen and all that kind of stuff.
Breen,
and I think
Breen,
a lot
Breen,
of us
Breen,
intersect
Breen,
with
Breen,
that.
Breen, Breen, Breen,
but,
Breen, Breen, Breen.
But this is you. Much like one of my favorite things
sure.
is like bad like 80s and 90s kids movies, which I don't think all of you like as much as I do. Like, it's all like a thing.
But
so,
you know, that's a good point, Mike. It should be said that at this point in my B-movie career, I need the hard stuff. So this is like heroin, and I don't necessarily recommend it. If you're just starting out with B-movies, you know, start with some Troll 2 or something.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
I want to play you guys the trailer for the movie I've picked, because I don't think I can describe it well enough without just showing it to you.
You want
to
play it now?
I'll announce the name after the trailer, but we're going to watch the trailer right now.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
My name is Slash Gallagher.
It is a time of revolution.
Come and join me in my cause. The California Corporation took Los Angeles away from us. Now I'm here to take it back.
Asking for a war, Mr. President. All Slash Gallagher wants is power.
I send you out to stop him, and you said he's invincible, sir.
I saw Gallagher walk through flame and gunfire like it was nothing. He killed half my men.
A direct assault, sir? There's hostages in there.
We get Gallagher any way we can.
Haven't you learned by now that every time we play this game, you lose?
There's just so many. I read a review about this that said there were too many explosions. It's just so many explosions. You can watch it on YouTube. Check it out. Hologram Boom. Man. It looks really good.
Very cool.
It does look really good.
Mike, you want to come over here and watch Fury Redo for a third time with me?
Paul, you can fuck off. I would watch it again with people.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
We would really, really love it if you left a rating or a review on iTunes. 5 stars is preferable.
I think 5 stars minimum.
Five star minimum review. We'll take 7 stars if you got it in ya.
Hey, and buy a t-shirt. Buy a t-shirt.
BMovieMania.com. You can buy our t-shirts.
They're dope shirts, right, Paul?
Those are dope shirts. And we got new shirts on the way.
Yeah, so we do.
Checking back. No, just buy the first one and then buy the second one later.
I wear one every day.
Me too.
I wear them as underwear.
It's good for draping over your lover's face.
Jay, are you talking about the office dildo?
Bye-bye.
I'm stopping.
Definitely talking about the office dildo.